This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Hello, Karen.
Hi, Chris. I was just swimming.
I was just swimming.
Nuh-uh.
Yes.
Are you serious?
Yes.
I have wet hair. Do you have wet hair? Is that what you're about to say?
I drove home, and during that time, it dried a little, but yes, it's still wet.
Guys, we need you to know that Chris and I did not join a swimming class together. This is pure COVID coincidence.
Nor did we plan that we were both simultaneously swimming. We were doing synchronized swimming, and we didn't even know it.
What were you doing? I was doing a lot of the frog.
Uncontrollable but not useful frog. It's better for my hips.
Right? It's like you're doing all four at once, but you're really making your upper thighs get you somewhere.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's really my arms doing all the work, but I got to do those frog kicks. And yes,
everybody gets a chance. The arms have to work hard, but the legs, they're there. They're there, trying.
And I don't ignore them. And I was wearing flippers and my snorkel and everything. It was just an hour ago.
Guys, swimming kismet is one of the more exciting ones I've ever experienced on a podcast. I don't know about you, Chris.
Now, what you don't know about me is that I, and I'm just going to be open about it, do not know what the word kismet means.
It means we have to bring our guest in. I know she'll know.
It's kind of like a fancy... We do a little riff beforehand, and that is concluding.
How would we do it like this? We'll set it up almost like one of those electric company word game setups where I'll say what I think it means and then Sarah can come in with the correct definition because I think it's like a fancy writer's way of saying fate.
Okay. And so I'll start it by simply re-asking, what does kismet mean?
Synchronicity? I don't know.
I think it is.
There she is, ladies and gentlemen, our guest for today, Sarah Schaefer. We had her back in and then turn around.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Sarah is a very, very funny comedian. I don't know if I've ever... Well, it'd be weird to just tell you. I like your comedy voice, the way you tell your jokes.
Agreed.
She is a...
I like your jokes, but I wish you didn't say them that way.
Right. Yeah, I've never said that. You have,
it
but no.
It would be so much
literally
funnier
your voice...
if you would just say them differently.
Could you say it faster? Faster and sexier.
Sarah's a podcast.
I'm sorry. I totally door stopped that compliment. Chris, jump back into it. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I'm just leading up to, she is quite legitimately, and it's gone viral at this point. And it was just, I think, something you started doing during quarantine, but your miniature comedy club has blown me away.
Yeah.
every Thank time you. I look at it, it is. And I, when I, everyone knows I'm into that, and I bought a kit and I spent time on the kit and I customized it. Sarah made hers from scratch. She made the walls. She made the furniture. She made the tiny joke books. She made the neon little sign. And I was amazed. And I, it made me want to try that because the lighting with miniatures is my favorite thing. But your comedy club, the Ha
And
ha
it's based
hole.
On a real place, right, Sarah? It's a real green room.
I mean, it's real in that it's a, what does a songwriter say? It's a composite. Of all the boyfriends I've ever had is who this song is about. No, the green room is definitely a composite of like green room tropes.
Very much, though, it looks
but
like
so the, real looking to so many people that I've heard, oh, that's the green room at whatever club. And I'm like,
UCB.
I didn't really model it after one, but it was like the essential green room. But yeah, no, I've been into miniatures and dollhouses and stuff my whole life, but I never really had done a lot of making. I was more of a collector. And it wasn't until the quarantine hit that I renovated my childhood dollhouse, and that kind of started me off on the path. And then I started a new house, which I got a kit and started like customizing it. But in the when I started that, I was like, oh, what if I made a little comedy club? And then that took over, and the house is just like in a pile in the corner right now. And I'll be getting to that later.
So many people were sending me that, and I was like, this is amazing. And I did not realize you had made it. I even gave it repeat viewings. How do people look at it? Just on your Instagram?
Yeah, I just posted pictures of it on my Instagram, my Twitter. And I mean, if you Google it, like Sarah Schaefer, ha ha hole, like you'll find it.
I love it.
I'm so embarrassed that I thought it was real.
So many people did. Some people were like, Sarah Schaefer opened a club. I'm like,
oh my God, no. For tiny people. No, there's no one in it. I make dollhouses. I don't play with dolls.
I'm like,
or
I would rather
dolls.
Die than open a real comedy club.
Well, I mean, such an uphill battle from jump.
Yeah.
It's just so funny that we were making miniatures at the same time.
I know.
Dare I say a kismet situation.
Yeah, it was. Like, hello?
Someone broke into your house?
I just got really scared.
What?
I think it was my air conditioning turning on and the door got sucked closed a little bit. But I'm like home alone for the first time in a really long time. Like, my husband is traveling and it really scared me. Sorry.
Do you want to check? Do you want to
I'm just going to look at the door.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, if it's any consolation, we would have it on
my
camera.
That's all it was.
It was suction?
Okay. Yeah.
Good.
But because I had the headphones on, it was like, because you know what? When I'm podcasting, my husband will sometimes come in the bedroom and I'll hear that same noise. And so I was like, oh, Scott. Wait, Scott's out of town. Okay, anyway.
Karen, you can tell
Karen,
her what
I didn't
said.
Follow your advice.
Sarah, as you stood up to check the door, Chris goes, oh, the good news is at least we'd have it on film.
I know.
We catch him
right away.
My point being, if a terrible thing's going to happen, at least it would be... We would have
hard evidence.
Yes,
admissible.
Right.
Yes. Don't have to rely on us for descriptions.
It would be, honestly, my greatest honor would be, you know, for you guys to cover it.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry about that. I'm very jumpy.
No, that was exciting.
But yeah, I people were thinking it was real. And Chris, I didn't know you were into it either until someone, or when that came out, people were like, oh, Chris Fairman, they were tagging you.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh my God, I can't believe we've never talked about this before.
And the people that were showing it to me, I don't think they knew you were a comic. They didn't know we were intertwined in it. That's a weird connected in any way. There we go. And it, like I said, it took me a long time before I realized you had made that. It's just really a cool piece of artwork.
Thank you.
Have
you, when you kind of come out as someone who's into miniatures, what ends up happening is everyone sends you every miniature thing they see.
Yes.
And I just, I'm like happy about that. But I also am like, you think the algorithm doesn't know me? You think the algorithm, like, you know me better than the algorithm? Like, I've already seen it 10 times by the time you send it to me.
Oh, I know. I know. Yeah. And I, yeah, that's exactly what I would say. I've just gotten, anytime there's skateboarding that involves it, I get sent this. I'm like, I don't tell anyone, oh, I've seen that and I love it. I'm just like, wow, thanks. I just want to give them the credit of describing something for me. It takes less energy too. But yeah.
Right. Be like, I already saw it. Like, well, that's kind of a dick thing to do. I don't do that. But like,
what was your first dollhouse situation? Like, how did you get introduced to this world as a child?
Well, my older sister had a dollhouse. And then I guess probably when I was like 8 years old, I got my own dollhouse and it was like unfinished wood. You know, like, I think it was a kit my dad had like put together the night before. A lot of glue was visible. But it was like this three-story Tudor, you know. I was in my early childhood, I was very fortunate to have access to toys like that.
Yeah.
It was like really elaborate and I was just became obsessed with it. All my allowance money I would save up to buy pieces of furniture to go into it. And I never got around to like finishing it. And so it's just this, I just kept it in storage or at my parents' house. And then my dad sold the house. And it was a very long story, but I ended up getting the dollhouse all the way to LA and just had it stored. And then in October, my husband and I moved to this new place and we had like a little shared garage space. And I was like, and we didn't have space to store it. So I was like, okay, I got to do this now. And so I got into it and I got really obsessed. I mean, I put shingles on it and did all this stuff and ended up giving it away. But it was like, I wanted to finish it after all these years. And it was really rewarding.
I saw that. Yeah, I just had forgotten about the house before your comedy club. I forgot about you acquiring that old house and fixing it up. Yeah. So you're a lifer. You've done this for years.
I have. But I mean, it didn't go into the level of obsession that it has until I had all this time. Because once you start making the stuff and like really creating things, it just is very addictive.
Yeah. Although I do have a house kit and I bought bricks and little bags of cement and cinder blocks. I was going to add a little DIY skate park on the side of this house and make little ramps. And I just kind of, it's sitting here. I don't know what, I've been going outside.
Yeah, I've been in that. Things opened up and I have been traveling and, you know, having that experience. So, but I feel that I know that at some point I'll be drawn back into it.
Yeah.
It's like you have a puzzle table, like how rich people have puzzle tables in the corner where you can just always have your project. You just know it's waiting for you when the time is right or when it goes back to that vibe, because I bet it was so satisfying. Like, I really do love miniatures and looking at the detail work. Because then you know the people like doing miniatures and they like a lot of times the things that they're making miniatures of, right? Mm-hmm. You'd have to be interested. So it was just so clear you have stood for hours upon hours in comedy club green rooms. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a green wall. It's a black leather couch that looks like it's from 22 years ago.
Yeah.
It's this. It's a mini fridge. Like, it was so clear and perfect. And that's so enjoyable of like, this is what it's like, right, everybody?
Well, and it becomes very contemplative, where you're like thinking about, I got really like deep into thinking about comedy and my place in it and like getting really metaphorical in my head and like, no comedy club is big enough to handle the vast array of talent out there. And who are the gatekeepers? I mean, I got stressed because I made like this wall of little headshots. And just being that kind of gatekeeper for the my own creation, my own fantasy creation, stressed me out to the point. Like, I had some people text me like mad that they weren't on the wall.
Oh, no, my God.
And I was like, I can't. And they were like trying to be jokey. And I'm like, I know you're upset. And I'm like, I can't. I was like, this is too much responsibility. I'm really glad I'm not a booker. I don't ever want that job. But
you get canceled on social media for the fake headshots on your fake miniature wall. That'd be amazing. Yeah,
it was a whole, it really made me think a lot about comedy and my place in it. And it was just a very transformative creative project.
Nice. Do you have plans for a next one?
Yeah.
Well, I did a live show in the club, like 2 weeks ago, and that was really successful and it was very, very fun. And I like made dolls out of the comedian, like real comedians. So like Osco, Okaska did it and Patton Oswalt, and I made dolls to look like them as much as I could. The options are really limited. And, So I put them on a stick, and because like I built the club without thinking I would do something like this. So I had them on a stick and they would be like moving around. And my husband is a director. Specifically, he's done a lot of comedy specials. So he knows how to film stand up. So he was like, he made it look like there were multiple angles, like it would cut to the close up of the comedian and then back. And I had little audience members. And so people zoomed in and the comedian zoomed in and would do the voice. And it actually was really cool. Like, I don't know if there's enough interest to do it again. Like, was it just an experiment that people wanted to see? But like a lot of people came and it made me go like, what else can I do with this? I'm thinking about that.
If this is a show pitch, I have greenlit. I mean, there's so many. They've done comedy and animated it. There's been so many shows to actually have little dolls of comedians. And if you could, you know, do stop motion mouth lip syncing and actually do a Wallace and Gromit comedy show, it would be both of my worlds exploding and making me so happy.
Yeah.
I want it to happen.
There's enough interest here on the show.
Yeah. Okay.
I will do anything I can. I like to sculpt. I will make little Patton Oswalt faces. Because that was the first thing I thought, too. Right now, I have a little Dodgers player in my library grabbing a book instead of catching a high fly. I just don't have a lot of figurines or dolls. But I've been wanting to do a little old man, like, just to practice animation. I've never done it. Take little pictures of a guy reaching for a book or a librarian type.
Well, now they have apps and stuff that like make stop motion so much easier. It's still very time consuming, but, you know, like my 6-year-old neighbor made a stop motion movie with the iPad. And I was like, oh, God, we are so far in the future now that like that is something that. So, I mean, But do it. I want to see it.
Yeah. But was it good? Like, give us your honest. She's funny? Not here right now.
No, I mean, she had to really work on the story, but.
Yeah.
She needs to punch it up.
Yeah. They never get the 3-act thing.
No.
That is really true, though. The idea that it's in people's hands, like the ability to do things that we couldn't do 20 years ago. At making things like this terrible pandemic a little more livable and maybe. Kind of then a little more interesting, you know, like I didn't know that about Chris. And then I'm kind of like, and I didn't know it about myself because actually, yeah, that's right. When people send me miniature things, it's my favorite thing to look at. Like, that's cool.
Right. And like, I think one thing that people like about miniatures is it's fantasy and it's cute. And it's also wonder and magic that like we don't really have a lot of. And one of the things that a couple of people said about the show I did in the club, they were like, because it was really, they were like, it was so analog, like, cause I just had them on a stick and was moving them around and it wasn't stop motion animation. Right. It wasn't high tech. Mm. And they were like, that felt so soothing and comforting in this world of very quick, fast moving, high tech stuff. Especially after the pandemic where everyone's zooming and everything's innovative and all this stuff. And they were like, it was just nice to see something that felt very homemade.
Yeah.
I was like, thank you.
Yeah, very. It's 2D. Yeah, even the show I did that was like, it was a Sims-like video game, and they made an icon of you. But you're just in a room, and people look at that instead of stand-up. And people love that. They love watching a visual that isn't just our ugly mugs.
Yeah.
My ugly.
Anything to change Zoom. Because I swear to God, it is just, it's torturous. It's so awkward. My timing is always off. I always have wet, weird hair. It just is like, it's a real trial and tribulation, I think.
I'm even confronted by the fact that we're getting good at Zoom.
I know.
Our timing.
That is confronting.
Yeah. Once we're back in the car, will we even be able to do this? Be so too much freedom.
Yeah, we'll have big, long pauses that we don't need. Right. Even though we're sitting right next to each other.
Chris?
Just so scared to talk at the same time.
It's just how it is. I was just gonna ask, what's that Toni Collette movie?
Hereditary. It's one of my favorite movies.
Is it your favorite?
Well, I love horror, and
it's amazing.
And I mean, I know you do too. And I like went to see Hereditary because I knew I liked that filmmaker and I knew I loved Toni. I saw the preview and was like, oh my God, this is going to be so good.
Yeah.
And we went to the like opening day movie theater, and I didn't know that it had a miniature element to it. Mm-mm. And so the movie starts, I'm already so excited because I know it's going to be good. And I had heard it's really scary, and I'm like, I don't like it if horror movies aren't scary enough.
Yeah.
So the very first scene is the dollhouse stuff coming up. And my husband said, he looked over at my face and I was just like,
oh boy.
Oh, what?
Here we go.
The true child inside came out of like, oh yes. Everything I love.
God, seeing it in the theater, it was so fun. And I just loved it. It was so
only, and I have no complaints about, I love the movie. I just, at the end, it's like, hey, it's the devil. The end.
There's no metaphor.
when the sweet and bizarre, have you seen those, that girl and her sister, their singing group, by the way, the actress that plays the little girl, they do YouTube it. It's very I've rewatched it. They are it's eerie. It's these two little girls that sing in unison. But anyway, when her, like, she's beheaded and then it's happening in the miniature world. I'm like, where in the movie does the miniature world dictate what is happening? Or is Toni Collette controlling what's happening? That to me is a movie that I wanted to see happen and it wasn't happening. And then when it was just like, oh, the devil. And I'm like, oh, the thing that doesn't exist. Ah, the devil. I love the movie, but I didn't want it to just be the devil. I wanted it to be...
Wait, the devil doesn't exist, but evil miniature houses with people in them do?
I believe in magic, not religion. Oh,
my apologies. That's me. That's on me.
I believe in the dark arts. Not just Satan.
Well, you'll love to know that Satan invented the dark arts.
Oh, no.
It's his project.
Well, a lot of people took it over and they're way more talented than Beelzebub.
Well, I read an interview with the director and I can't remember exactly what he said, but he talks about why he decided to make the ending literal as opposed to metaphorical. And I remember finding it very interesting. Like, oh yeah. He's like, at the end, I didn't want people to, I don't remember what he said. You'd have to look it up. But, the whole time I'm like, I'm like, every movie is about grief. Every horror movie is about grief. and this one really gets into grief. And
yeah. And that part I love. Yeah.
Yeah. And I loved it. And then at the end, I was like, oh, it's also about the devil.
See, I was like, why all that miniature work? All the great job of filming all the mini, and then
it didn't pay off.
It's just because all the work you both do on miniatures hails Paimon, and you have to admit it, that you're doing it. You're doing his bidding.
That's right.
In the miniatures. You know, I was going to tell you guys I think I've told Chris this before, but Sarah, when I was like 7 or 8, my dad for Christmas made my sister and I a dollhouse using stuff that they had used in our house. So like The kitchen in the dollhouse had the linoleum in our kitchen
and the
carpeting every room. And he was telling the story. Like, my sister and I, of course, went insane and were obsessed with it. And the other, like, the last time I was home, he was telling someone else the story. And he was like kind of going, yeah, we tried to throw this thing together. It was so sad. And my sister and I both were like, what are you talking about? That was our favorite toy of all time. He was like, oh, really? We're like, that was like the Christmas. It was like a house of our house.
He was holding it to a higher standard than a child would.
Yes, exactly.
My dad and I did the same thing. I got into it because of just making models of little cars. Mm-hmm. And then I got into like making war scenes and melting little soldiers and pools of blood and putting snow, and all the mud was tile grout. And I would enter it in the fair. And one time I got this blue ribbon and I was all excited. And so my dad and I made a train set with a tunnel, and the train would go through the tunnel. It was just paper mache, but there was trees and ice skaters and a little loading area. And it was one of the best memories of my life. And I remember my dad giving it away at a garage sale because he was frustrated that the train would derail in the tunnel. He just couldn't handle it. And he thought I shared the same frustration.
He cast it out.
And one day it was gone. I'm like, where's this train set? I want to put it above my bed like Arthur Bach. And you know, what a great way to wake up at 8 a.m. Or let's be honest, 9 a.m. A train goes off and little bells and whistles. I always thought that
then
is
your butler
just,
comes in.
Yeah, just Ricky Schroeder way to wake up. And then it was gone. It was gone. I think given away for free. Oh, I guess I'm kind of mad at my dad about this, you guys.
Sounds like you need to make a phone call.
I will. A lot of stuff.
It is sad, though, that he thought, like, throw all this out because some technicality that, like, just for 1 second, think about how a kid looks at stuff like this. Yeah. They don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, we peeled up the mountain. We re-soldered the tracks. He did it all. And then we glued it back down, and then because the train was going, and then we put the tunnel back on, it started derailing. I think it was his frustration. We just gave it to a neighbor kid or something.
Well, you know, we should change the subject because Sarah wrote a book, and I bet you'd want to maybe talk about that a bit.
Sure.
A hint?
Sure.
It's a memoir.
It is.
I believe it's pronounced.
Yeah. Questioning that decision even after it's been out for a year. No, I my book is called Grand, and it's kind of like a, I guess the easiest way to describe it is like it's a funny wild. And it's like me going into the Grand Canyon on a trip with my sister, and then I like flashbacks of memories from my life, and you know, very proud of it. And I think people like it, the ones that have read it. And I like love that I've written a book, because what I found is that it lasts forever. And like people will see me and they'll like, people I know will be like, I haven't read your book, I'm sorry. And I'm like, good, save it. Because yeah. I love getting the feedback in a slow drip. Cause like I'll still, you know, now it's slowed down a little bit, but like, you know, every week or two, every couple of weeks, somebody will be like, I just finished your book and I loved it. And it's like, oh, this is still coming back to me. Cause you do put so much work into it. You need to have a longer period of people experiencing
it.
If
you do
whatever.
A set on Comedy Central or have a stand up anywhere, it lasts for 2 weeks and then you're on to the next thing. You're like, I thought that would fulfill me in some way, but it's over already.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, at least a book lasts. Yeah.
Well, and also you put so much, I mean, especially if you're writing about your life, that is like a special kind of level of work where you're you're exposing yourself while being entertaining. Like you're kind of delivering the goods, but also you have to be vulnerable and real. It's a tall order, and it pulls a lot out of you. So,
oh my God, I felt like I was sick. Like,
yes,
I had to be taken care of during it because it was just so, I was just sharing things I'd never shared before publicly. I was dealing with just my personal issues with my family and like you know, everything. And it was so intense. And like, I really don't even know if I fully understand the healing that took place. Like, even if no one ever read the book, just the process of writing it and sharing it with my family, really, really, was like, I've already said this word once, but transformative. I mean, like, it lifted up some things that I had been keeping inside and was afraid to say. And some of it, I just was shocked that I was even afraid to say some of it, you know, and then was like, oh, wow. Like, cause people be like, oh my God, that part you wrote about, that must've been really scary to write. And I was like, oh no, no. It was the part that no one thought was scary that I was like, oh my God, I have to admit that I'm like insecure about my career. They're like, but you talked about all this other shit and your divorce and, you know, no. But yeah.
Yeah.
It was really an amazing experience. And, you know, so I've been starting to, people have been starting to ask, like, are you going to write another book? And I'm like, I don't think so.
I spilled the beans already.
Maybe one day, maybe if something really cool happens that it just demands a book, like, oh, I died and saw heaven for 30 seconds. Like,
yes.
I gotta write a book about that.
Yeah,
please write that book, Sarah, because instead of it being like a child, you know, like as dictated to their, you know, brain surgeon or whatever, it's like, Jesus's face came to me, but it's just you. Yeah. Just be like, hey, look, I have this story. It's kind of like a dream, but I saw God anyway.
You guys can figure it out. But here's what happened.
Glowing lights. You know the story.
Yeah, everyone says the light thing. Mm-hmm. There's got to be something to it.
Gotta be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe in God, just not the devil, Karen.
I know. We won't try to make you believe in the devil on this episode. We'll,
that's I'll a stop whole shoving other thing.
It in. It's just interesting. Did you see there was a Netflix series about
it's like called
Afterlife and stuff?
Yeah, I died for a minute. I can't remember what it's called, but
yeah, there was a lady who died for like 7 minutes in a kayak, like flipped over, and like they brought her back Ooh. From like complete water death. Like,
fuck kayaks. There's a by the
there's
way.
Also
fuck them.
Chris,
sorry.
So many strong stances on this episode.
You know what? And you know what? Canoes can suck it too.
No.
Yeah, all the skinny boats. You heard me.
You're blowing up all our careers, not just your own.
Hey, sorry. Sorry, I don't like to boof it down the waterfall, you paddlers. Sorry.
My only point was, yeah. Sorry to retell a TV show, but on this TV show, there was a little kid, and he's now a teenager who is clearly uncomfortable about it. But when he was a kid, he was convinced that he was an agent from Hollywood from the 40s and 50s. And he knew people's names and made all these references. And they checked it out, and he completely knew this man's like personal, specific life. There's a couple things that he said that his daughter checked over the answers, and she goes, no, he never had a blue card. And then the aunt shows up, is like, he had a blue card. It was when he was a teenager. Like,
oh my God.
It's so mind blowing. It's so nuts. Fascinating.
There are some things that you're like, how do you explain that? I don't.
Yeah.
I just saw a headline on a news story the other day that was like a 3 year old said he was, a woman was talking to him like at some campsite or something or whatever. And they're like, he had all these details, and it's the exact description of a woman that went missing there.
No.
And
no.
My first thought was, she's alive. She lives there. She's yes. hiding. And she went up to him and was like, hey, little boy, and then ran back into the woods.
Don't tell anybody he saw me.
That's the stuff like that. It's woo.
But was the story framing it like the 3 year old was possessed by the missing woman or something?
No, that he had like been seeing her and like talking to her.
Oh,
yeah. Like, just, you know, and a lot of times these stories, then 5 years later, you find out that the parents coached them or told them to say it or whatever. But some of it is hard. You can't explain.
On its face, though, that's a great story.
Yeah.
The lady. That's like the great opening of a horror movie. Is
it
like
really
the
is.
The 3 year old that's like, but the lady. It's so good.
My dad was working in a Montgomery Ward's changing tires in, I think, the 60s, and someone called in. And my dad doesn't believe in anything. He's always been kind of atheist. Even as he gets older, he's not become spiritual. And I love that about him. But he,
God bless him.
When he was, or whoever, may the light magic bless him. Someone called in and said, I want to pick up my truck. I had a truck repaired or something. I don't remember all the details of this. So he like wrote it down, and then he had to find the guy's name and call, and he called, and a woman answered, and she said, my husband had a truck like that, but he's been dead for 10, 15 years. And my dad was like, well, then who called about this truck? She's like, well, that the truck's been gone forever. And I asked him to retell the story, and he doesn't want to talk about it. But when I was younger, he told me that, and it was, I'm not doing the story justice, of course, but
he had like a real, a weird experience that he knows was weird.
Over the phone. Yeah. And there was no explanation. And because there's no explanation, and because he's not a spiritual person, he kind of just doesn't want to talk about it because it was scary as shit.
Yeah.
Is my truck done yet? No, ghost call. Ghost down.
No, God. Chill down your spine. Yeah.
I have to ask him the details. My little anecdote. It started so well. You know, as
I believe in Mr. Fairbanks's experience. It happens.
Yeah.
Weird shit happens all the time.
Yeah. For us to think that we know the full extent of human experience is so naive and egotistical to just think that, oh, well, we've got it figured out. We know that that doesn't happen. And that it's like, do we really know?
Exactly.
Do we, or are we very scared about what we don't know? And so we need to make up these things to make ourselves feel better. It could never happen. Okay, great. And you must feel so relieved.
Yeah.
Let's talk about aliens.
No.
I can't either.
They're scary.
And when it comes to horror movies, I like ghost stories that are really scary. I like pretty much all of it. I don't love just gore for the sake of gore, like Saw and Final Destination.
Have you seen Marianne, Sarah?
No, is that like
God.
That?
Watch it right when we're done. It's okay. French. Watch it in French. I've talked about it so much. Everyone's probably tired. But a lot of people have watched it and heard me talk about it. And then they watched it because of the podcast. It's scary. And it is in that hereditary way. There's no jump scares. It is just eerie. And then it goes off into backstory of this girl and her friends.
Now I'm wondering if I have to. I don't know. I'll check it out.
It will melt your face off. It's so scary. I've watched it multiple times. It's a series.
The movies that scare me the most for some reason are ones involving aliens, like Dark Skies. I was like, up. You know when someone sees a mouse and they get up on the furniture, like get it away. That's how I was like, no. Like I was like screaming, losing my shit. I really think aliens are scary. And I'm not talking like Alien, the movie Alien. No. I'm talking like Close Encounters type stuff.
The concept of aliens.
That alien head shape with the skinny arms really just.
And why is that always the shape? Why is it always that oval with a chin that comes to a point?
Because, Chris. And this is why I'm so scared of it, is growing up, I guess I saw some unsolved mysteries or some shit on TV about alien abductions. And I just became convinced that every time I saw a light out the window, that it was time. And I was like, going to get sucked up. And
I always thought it was Santa Claus, Rudolph. Yeah.
You're so sweet.
Yeah. Well.
But anyway, that alien shape is what people see in their abduction experiences.
Yeah.
And that is and they've like done studies where it's like the human brain will concoct similar shapes and things. But what if it's because that's what people actually saw?
Well, I hate to do this now, in the same way that I know for a fact, Chris, I've mentioned this 1,000 times, I'm truly obsessed with the show Ancient Aliens. I know that it is absolutely like racist and reductive and insane, where they're like, who could have invented this? Where it's like the fucking Incans, the Mayans, yeah, like the
pyramid,
it happened.
The pyramid thing is offensive. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
there's other examples.
Yeah.
But yeah. What some of the things that they're trying to pull through are fascinating, which is like they're, you know, the elongated skulls that they have found around the world that are, there was skull wrapping in Egypt, like Tutankhamun's skull was wrapped in elongated and his sister's. And that was like a trend or whatever. That was, it was all the rage. But then they've also found ones that the bone is thicker than normal human skull bone and it can't be drilled into and this and that. No. So like, I love that show for the
You're
pure, like,
freaking me out.
It like the unexplained aspect of those things where it's like, yes, most of what you're saying is total bullshit and just weirdness. Yeah. But there's just little things here and there where you're like, we don't know. We just don't know.
Yeah.
And that I don't want to know. If it's true, please leave me out of it.
Yeah.
Leave me be.
Let's deal with the problems right in front of us, you guys.
Yes, which
but
are
maybe what we need is a common enemy to unite us.
Yes, yeah,
you're right. The virus isn't working anymore. Let's go, aliens.
Oh, right. Oh, I just tried us. That. Right.
Yeah, that's funny. They did kind of try to bust that, like with that. Was it 60 Minutes? That story about that there's proof or whatever that they actually did. Was it the Air Force that went on record of saying that there are definitely UFOs?
Yeah, wasn't there supposed to be breaking news coming up real soon? Didn't they find
They tried to do it, but I feel like as almost like as a globe, we all went, no, we're not, we can't do this. like
we're not interested
in
please
month
don't.
Eight of COVID. No, we're not doing this.
Yeah, it's no. Terrible timing for alien news.
No, can't.
Yeah.
Please don't make me.
Yeah, wait till I'm bored.
It would suck if you were an alien and this was your time for your article to come out, finally.
Your big article.
This your big article, your it. Big profile. Yep. You thought it was going to come out. They're like, it's just not the right time.
Sorry.
I was always thinking, what a terrible time for aliens if they'd visited Earth during quarantine, because no one would be walking around. We'd all seem really rude. No one would shake their hand. Everyone's just touching elbows. They'd really get a bad impression of humans, I think.
Yeah, not now.
Yeah, no one was nice. They all had they wear cloth on their mouths. It just was lame. I don't like Earth. Let's go invade.
What are they up to? You know what I wanted to ask you, Sarah? And you can absolutely tell me if you don't want to talk about this because we didn't light it. I didn't run it by you. But do you ever miss doing daily live television?
Oh, okay. Well, do you mean Nikki and Sarah?
Yeah.
The MT.
Yeah.
It was weekly.
Oh, but sorry.
It was live season one. And then season two, we pretended it was still live. But then they were like, it's too crazy doing it live because we couldn't get any guests to come to the studio at 11 p.m.
Right.
Yeah. And so we kind of did more of a traditional late night live to tape, where it was essentially live, but
it was a great show. I remember whatever job I had at the time we watched it. I think it was, well, whatever, we watched you guys and were like, the live aspect, I was obsessed with it because that's such a roll of the dice and
rare.
You guys handled it like it was really, really enjoyable and entertaining.
Thank you. I mean, it was like I miss the whirlwind of it all. I miss like the money and I'm
and the do you miss that off when I because I went and did your podcast and you and Nikki were working and
you were in our office.
I was in that office and I was like, oh my god, I was just made I was nervous by just how much pressure was looming over that giant office. Yeah,
it was really stressful. Like, I don't miss the stress of it, but I miss, like, you know, it was a very exciting. And what I missed the most was the creativity of it and the collaboration and just getting to make something that I really loved.
Mm-hmm.
That I really miss. And I'm like always striving to get projects going that recapture that feeling.
Yeah.
And the people that worked on the show were all still friends. And it was just a really good group of people. And you know, we had so much fun and we didn't know what we were doing. And live TV was really, really scary. I mean, I'll never for the rest of my life forget that first show and them counting down.
Yeah.
To going live and you, in the TRL studio in Times Square. Like, I could not have ever imagined something so insane happening in my life. And
wait, can you tell us what you were thinking as the guy was like in 5, 4?
Right. Three. So, like, we had done a rehearsal and that was all fun. And then, like, we had planned, like, Nikki and I, you know, we came out in bathrobes before we were in our full wardrobe to greet the audience and say hi and like get them dancing and like saying, you know, and I was like so choked up, the amount of screaming and my, it just it, like when we came out, I was like, oh my God, this is electric. And then we go backstage and like we get all dressed up and it's just like, I mean, I am just fully adrenaline pumping and like she and I are like, staring. We did this Wonder Woman pose thing where you stand and like, and we was, you know, stared at each other like confidence pose. And
that works. That really works for people.
It does. I mean, yeah. It really, and you're like, and we were we were in high heels and like, it was the prettiest I've ever looked in my life. You know, like, and it just, you know, we went out there and then we're standing behind the desk and, you know, it's, there's people running around and, you know, and the guy's doing that. 5, 4, 3. And I'm right before they'd start the countdown, Nikki leaned over and was like, do it for Van. And Van was this really high up guy at Viacom that we had never met that would give notes. And we were just like, whoever Van is, do it for Van. That's what she said. And then, yes. Like, we said that every week from then on, we would go, do it for Van. And
that's and so then, genius.
And then, like, you know, it starts and, like, you know, we had a couple little flubs, you know, with lines. And, like, I think Nikki cursed or something, said shit or something like that.
Live.
And MTV was like, do that again.
It was so exciting.
Yeah.
Did they have, like, a radio delay? Did they have, like, a radio delay button? Were they?
I think there was a 5-second delay, but because we were past the, you know,
in the beginning,
the
Jimmy Kimmel
Janet Jackson nipple.
Jimmy Kimmel was live. Jimmy Kimmel Live was live like that first year or two, and it, no comedian did well on it like that. It is also they had you come out on a catwalk to the right of the stage, so the audience had to wrench their necks to look at your profile, or they just ignored you. And I,
yeah.
Before I went out, they're like, well, Super Dave Osborne's going a little long with the mystery box or whatever they were doing. Can you do less time? Some guy, stagehand, asked if I could do less time. And so I did different jokes than I told them I was going to do. And they and I came out and they're on cue cards. I was so young and dumb, I didn't realize that this was a bad idea. And they bleeped as soon as I went off script. They didn't just bleep. They bleeped entire sentences. My Jimmy Kimmel set is just beep. So it looks like I'm just going, fuck, shit, cock, fuck, balls. And, but
that
I wasn't,
would make me love you.
And so I thought it went well. And then I went to a bar with my friends to watch it because I, of course, didn't have cable. And it just looked like I lost my mind and swore because they did have a delay button. Like, I love that MTV was like, no, say shit again. Oops.
I mean, you know, they were like, obviously don't do that a lot, yeah. But like they loved the like, we're going to get in trouble type vibe.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, some of the, what ended up happening is we had to tape a lot of the interviews with celebrities and stuff ahead of time because they wouldn't want to come. And so, you know, it was mainly me and Nikki being live. You know, I don't remember anything happening that was like, oh, fuck. You know, I mean, we were so rehearsed and like prepared and we had such a good staff. But like also we had between dress rehearsal and the show, we would sit there and change the script so much that it was really stressful, like to then get your head on and go, okay. we're not doing it that way anymore. And yeah. we're, you know, I look back and I'm like, wow, my brain was really, and that's probably why I loved it so much, is because like everything was being stimulated and challenged. And
how long did you guys do that?
We only did 2 seasons. We had 25 episodes total.
See, and that's not even enough time to figure something out. I mean, you're probably figuring it out.
That is a lot. So at the time we were like, that's not enough time for us to figure it out. You shouldn't cancel us so quick.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, we had 1 million episodes compared to most shows right. that get like 6.
Sure.
You know, but we also did a lot of other stuff for MTV on air. And so it was just a lot in 1 year, a lot of experience and just such a good time.
Did Scott work on, your husband work on? I don't know Scott, but.
He didn't work on it. He was like, you know, we always talk about how that was a really good time in our relationship too. When we're trying to be like, how do we get back to that? You know, like, because he was like, we were a team, you know, he was like supporting me through it. And
oh, you've been with him for a decade. How long have you been with him?
10 years.
10 years. See, I guessed a decade. Look at me.
Yeah.
Happy anniversary is what I meant to say.
Well, and then he sold a show a couple years ago with Rory Scovel. And
wait, the
Robbie.
I love Robbie.
Yeah. And Scott directed all his Rory specials and things. And so,
wow,
like he had his turn to have his like big dreams come true. And so I was like, it was just a like, you know, we're starting to realize how rare those moments are. And no matter what happens, even if it doesn't last or it doesn't go the way you thought, like how to appreciate them and how I was literally before we were recording, I was working on my own podcast, The Shaper Shakedown. Check it out.
Shaper Shakedown.
Shaper Shakedown.
I was working on a little audio sketch, which will hopefully be out tomorrow, but about the 3 easy steps of selling a TV show. It's not that easy. Like I go through all like step 1B, 1C, 1D, 1E. Like it keeps going. Like, because I think people think it's a much simpler process than it is. And also just how many steps there are that things can go wrong. And it's part of why it's so hard to get one on
and
the
it's
air.
Usually right in the end.
I mean, Robbie was Rory's and Scott's show went all the way. You know, they got picked up to series, they shot the whole thing, and then Comedy Central was like, we're not sure.
Oh, because like, that's why I just watched it on YouTube. But to me, it was a comedy. So there's plenty of reminders.
Yeah, they premiered the, I mean, nowadays, what difference does it make? Like, they premiered it on the channel.
Yeah.
And then they put it on YouTube.
That's how they do everything now. Yeah.
Nobody who watched it cared, but financially, it would suck because there's union stuff that comes into play where, like, if it doesn't air on TV, you don't get as much money.
Like a second, third, or fourth check. Yeah. It's just YouTube. But, it was so good. I loved that show. Yeah.
I'm like, thank you. It was my
tell Scott. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
But that thank me. You. That thank you.
I co-piloted that motherfucker. I love Rory Scovel. He's so funny. Sarah, will you, and I know this is a total like Aunt Carol thing to do, but one of my favorite bits of all time.
Oh, I know what it is.
Do you?
Yeah. The night, because I've tried to actually. Thing?
No.
Oh, I thought you were going to make her scream. Okay. Sorry.
No.
Okay. Sorry.
No, it's the story you told. I saw you tell it Meltdown one time about the time that you, had to go to the bathroom and land at the grocery store. Oh,
yeah. I haven't thought about that in a long time. Yeah. The story is basically, long story short, I had to pee so bad that I was like, I've never had to pee that bad. And and this is what makes the story so funny, is that I thought if I let a little bit out, that like, just like, you know, because I explained in the joke, like women, you know, a little bit of pee comes out like all the time. Like when you sneeze or you like a couple drops come out, like men don't really, I don't think they experience that the way women do. And
my goal is to always make my sister laugh till she pees. She's so easy to make pee.
You just let a little bit out. And then I would like thought I could stop it. And then I couldn't stop it. And so I'm literally, I'm not exaggerating. I was paying and just peeing myself. Like, and it was, and I thought like, oh, it'll absorb into my pants, but it did. It went straight out the bottom of my pants. Like, I didn't realize, like, it just flows down like a hose, like collected on the floor. It's New York. So I like, I'm so ashamed, but I just walked away and pretended nothing had happened.
Well, if you're peeing, you got to start walking. You can't just stand in a puddle. Oh, that's the best.
It's my favorite. Wasn't it in, it was in New York, right? At one.
It was
at,
in New York in Clinton Hill, Christine's? Like at this little, grocery store. It was the one I always went to. And that's like the end of the joke is like, I'm like, well, you know, in a way, and now it really was my grocery store because I marked it like a dog.
I just remember standing in the back of the Meltdown. I think because as a kid, I was always like, I always had to go to the bathroom. My sister always had to take me to the bathroom. Peeing was always like a thing. And just a person telling a story of like, I really had to pee and then I just peed.
Well, right. So that's why it's like I wasn't drunk or something. And it wasn't like a crazy party night. It was like broad daylight. Like... And I chose to pee right there. But I really was like, thought I was going to pass out. Like after I've heard all of these people's stories about how people piss themselves. And one guy told me, he goes, oh, I know what happens when you don't pee, when you really have to. You faint and then you pee.
No.
Yeah. He said he passed out all like. Had a urinal one time, like, cause he had to have held it in too long. And he like fell down, like as he was peeing and he was like, oh, that's what happens. Eventually your body forces the issue.
I would love it if you'd like lightly fainted to the businessman standing at the urinal next to his. like, not here, not here.
He's like, I know that happens when people see it.
It's very impressive. I'm known to give people the vapors.
So, Sarah, your podcast, it's basically you in this closet. Is this your main closet?
Yeah, this is my closet. These are my clothes. And well,
it's great for absorbing. That's soundproofing.
It is, yeah. And I have a little, like, Scott and I made a little makeshift desk that folds down. And I have it all neatly figured out. But my podcast is just me talking. And it's mainly... like stuff about crafting and gardening and like my hobbies, and then probably 60% me bitching about the comedy industry. People have come to accept that that's part of the deal if you're gonna listen.
Yeah, right.
Well, now that you're a booker, yeah, you gotta.
Yeah, no, these fucking club, comedians.
That ha ha hole.
Yeah,
get in the mix.
Right when we're done.
Lineups.
Right after we're done recording, I'm going to see if I'm one of the tiny headshots.
You're not.
Oh, no.
It's okay.
It's all women.
I don't do a lot of club work these days.
Well, it's mostly women except two men.
Who?
Because it's not a woman's only club. It's just whoever's the best.
Yeah, yeah.
Who, nice one.
Who'd you put on the wall? Who'd you put on the wall? It had to be Carrot Top.
It's Carrot Top and Jeff Dunham are the two men. You're right.
It is?
It is.
Oh, that's funny. That's the other guy. Yeah, you got to book the big Vegas guys.
The big guys. Yeah. Yes.
Well, because like seats. I was trying to recreate the experience of when you're a female comedian and you go to a club and you look around at the headshots and you're scanning for the women.
Yeah.
And you only find like two, and it's two women that you're like, I am nothing like her. No judgment, but you're just like, or maybe some judgment, but like, you're like,
always judgment.
Oh, that's who they chose as the token women. It makes you feel like you don't belong there because you're trained to compare yourself only to the other women and not to the men. And so I just was like, I'm going to do this and then put two men and then make the men squirm when they go, well, I've actually like experienced. Like some friends coming over, looking at it and just being like giving me a blank stare when I tell them about who's on the wall. And they're like, I'm like, you don't have to understand. It's not for you.
It's kind of a bummer when you play the belly room at the comedy store, the only room I do there. But it used to be a women comedian only room. And so all the hedge and you don't wreck. There'll be like Felicia Michaels or, you know, there's known people, but there's so many comics. on that wall, and there's so many old headshots, and it's really fun to watch. But when I'm in there, I'm like, I don't belong here. Why am I? This is like, I don't know. It's the
I don't feel like I belong there either. I don't.
Yeah, there's more to it than just the headshots. Yeah, I just don't belong there because
I think it's all the murdered souls in the basement. Cicero's.
It's all the murdered souls.
None of us belong there except for Satan.
Yeah, Satan. Let me go meet Satan. Swim
Satan
through all these Joe
Tuesday
Rogan
night,
farts.
Open mic.
Satan does pretty funny women.
You have to impress Satan, or you'll never make it at the Comedy Store.
I mean, Satan. He books the original room, but what I like his work in the main room because.
Yeah, the original room's kind of his alt room.
Yeah. And what else do you want to plug, Sarah? Anything pressing? Anything you need to discuss with us before we go?
Do you need to pee?
I would say
you need to pee right now.
Yeah, I recommend peeing when you have to go.
Yes.
But otherwise, yeah, check out my podcast, Schaefer Shakedown. But I also just, this is not related to me at all. I recommend a document. I'm really into fungus. Like, I think that fungus, it will save the world. And it's just an incredible living organism. And obviously millions of different species. But I'm really into gardening. And so I've been learning about fungus and, like, microbes in the soil and all this shit. And I read a book, Entangled Life, which was like very sciencey, very nerdy and detailed. But now there's a documentary on Netflix called Fantastic Fungi, however you say it. And it sort of sums up what the book I read. And it's not the same people, but it's sort of the same thing where it's like shows you just a real great rundown of all the magic of mushrooms and like from what they do for the environment to like. How little we understand about them and like what the potential for them for our well-being and mental health are. It's just I've been preaching it because I just think it's so fascinating and cool. And I'm
like
someone
microdosing
who doesn't, well, yeah, microdose. I've never done shrooms, but I really want to, but
I know people that claim to have gotten well from doing that.
They're on
lithium and stuff.
In the final phases of the clinical trials.
Cool.
For psychedelic drug treatment for mental health. And I mean, they're saying that it's so promising that it is literally curing PTSD.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, curing depression and those things. And like, you know, I think in our lifetime we will see it. It's already happening. But yeah, mushrooms can like get rid of toxic waste and they can, be part of materials that are renewable. I mean, it's just endless. I love them so much and they are part of us. They're in our bodies right now.
That's a great. And then she takes a huge swig of kombucha and I'll prove it to you.
And that's why I want you to check out Schaefer's Booch.
Schaefer's Booch.
That's a double plug. She double plug.
God, I can't wait to try that booch.
That booch. Well, I want to watch Fantastic Fungi. Yeah, I'm a believer.
There's one guy who's like a big part of it that by the end you're like, all right, buddy, shut the fuck up. But he's very lovable.
It just reminds me of the scene in Ghostbusters where Annie Potts is like, do you have any hobbies? And he's like, I collect spores, molds, and fungus. And I always thought that
it's
was
that
just,
guy. Yeah, exactly.
You're that guy. You're Egon. I love it. Thank you for being on our podcast.
Thank you for having me. You guys are delightful.
Yeah, great to talk to you.
I hope to see you again soon. We're all going to start doing comedy, right?
Sure.
After this third wave of ska music?
Yeah.
Thanks for, happy anniversary. 10 years.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Thanks for remembering.
Of course. Of course. The basket of fruit is coming. You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYNAR.
AR.
Oh, I stepped on your AR. I don't think I've ever done that. I'm sorry.
I was doing it like a backup singer. AR.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
Mouth horn.
With Karen and Chris.
Sarah, I'm going to count to three and we're going to clap on four. One, two, three.
Best clap ever.
It really was.
Doesn't that feel good? It just feels good.